if we want to focus on these mycotoxins more or less, these frequently occurring mycotoxins, we should have always in mind as regards the digestive system, the gastrointestinal system, the impact on that system for DON, for DON, and for fumonisins also, in terms of, as it was called back in the older days, as a vomit toxin, is what the DON, but nowadays the field is getting more and more complex. Also, there's cases of respiratory issues caused by fumonisins. Of course, the genital tract, mainly affected by xylanon, either mainly in the female, the sows, and gilts, predominantly premature gilts.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Mycotoxins were found in over 90% of feed sampled in 2025. Don't let mycotoxins impact your pig's health and performance. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/mycofix. Swine Veterinary Partners is comprised of four clinics across Canada that specialize in swine health, management, research, and development. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company.
Welcome to the Swinet Canada podcast. I am Dan Columbus, and I'll be your host for the episode today. And with me, I have Dr. Panagiotis Tassis, who is an associate professor in swine medicine and reproduction at the School of Veterinary Medicine at the Aristotle University of Thessaloniki in Greece. And I hope I got all that right, because Perfect. It's not usually what I'm used to pronouncing. So thank you for joining us. Because some people, especially over in Canada, might not know who you are, I'll just ask for you to introduce yourself and kind of give us a little bit of information on your background and journey so far.
Yes, thank you very much for your kind words, your warm welcome, and the introduction and the invitation. You pronounced my name perfectly, so I work as an associate professor here in the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Aristotle University of Thessaloniki in Greece. I'm working with pigs since more than 20 years ago on clinical aspects and, of course, on research. And apart from my academic duties here, as possibilities, we're working a lot outside in terms of supporting swine medicine and reproduction in all fields of swine production in Greece and in other kind of countries outside Greece. So my experience, I would say, on clinical and research is more or less a bit more than two decades. And I've worked in a lot of clinical trials on my favorite aspect, which is on terms of research, my favorite aspect is mycotoxins, but also other indicative research interests include novel vaccination protocols, and the efficacy of antibiotics, of antimicrobial substances, and of course, always the search for novel feed additives, novel feed raw materials, and issues that would improve swine health and production.
Yeah, great. So like you said, one of your main areas is mycotoxins. So that's going to be our topic today, and looking at what are the effects in swine health and reproduction. I think we can skip over the what is a mycotoxin, because every mycotoxin presentation that's out there starts with that slide. And maybe we'll just get into, you know, what are the major mycotoxins that maybe we should be interested in or worried about in pigs?
Yes, we can skip that. It's really well known. It's really all over the world. So it's the number of mycotoxins present are a lot, you know. It's a great number, so we should stick and focus in a more narrow field. So we could say that five or six mycotoxins are of great significance for pigs in terms of occurrence, because they're frequently occurring in swine feed raw materials and to swine final feed, and in terms of their clinical presentation and then clinical outcome, they are toxic potency in pig. So we will discuss, and we focus here at the deoxynivalenol, don, zearalenone, zen, ochratoxin A, fumonisins, aflatoxins, mainly B1 and T2 toxins. These are six major toxins that we are focusing on our research and our clinical also work here at the clinic.
Yeah, so I think one of the things with mycotoxins too that's brought up is that the effects that they have can be different depending on which mycotoxin is present or ingested. So maybe let's go over the main health impacts of each of those mycotoxins, especially with pigs.
Yes, if we want to focus on these mycotoxins more or less, frequently occurring mycotoxins, we should have always in mind as regards the digestive system, the gastrointestinal system, the impact on that system for DON, for DON, and for fumonisins also, in terms of, as it was called back in the older days, as a vomitoxin, is what the DON, but nowadays the field is getting more and more complex. Also, there's cases of respiratory issues caused by fumonisins. Of course, the genital tract mainly affected by zearalenone, either mainly in the female, the sows, and gills, predominantly premature gills, are mainly affected by zearalenone. And of course, we have seen also effects on boar semen. Ochratoxin A, it's nephrotoxic, is a major nephrotoxic agent. T2 toxin has a different way of working in terms of immune response, which is a major problem caused by mycotoxins, the effects on the immune response, and secondarily the effects on the vaccine response of pigs due to this immune dysfunction. And of course, the old ones, the aflatoxins, the well-known aflatoxins with known liver toxicity for pigs and immune effects.
Yeah, so I think one of the things is we tend to look at mycotoxins on their own, like each individual mycotoxin. And one of the things that's come out is co-contamination of mycotoxins in feed. So, and I apologize because this is not on the prepared list of questions, but what do you see a difference in the effects if you have more than one mycotoxin present?
Well, that's one of the beauties of the mycotoxins. That's one of the beauties of the whole research field that makes it more and more interesting every time. So, and this one that keeps me, you know, working on this part more and more significantly, because interactions is a whole new field, because it's interactions of two or three or four mycotoxins, because we are discussing about mycotoxin mixtures, not separate mycotoxins in each grain, because we're having swine feed, final feed, which is mixture of grains, so we most probably find more than one mycotoxin. These interactions, usually from what we see in our research works and on the field, are either additive or close to additive or synergistic. In very few cases, we can see antagonistic effects. So this is something that also the clinical veterinarian should have in mind, and the nutritionist should have in mind, the farmer also, and the research community should keep an eye on these interactions and their effects on the field in vitro also, and in vivo, of course, from our side.
Yeah, it makes sense from a research perspective to focus on one, makes it easier and not have the confound, but obviously that's not what happens out in the real world. So another area that you've said that you'd like to focus on is the reproduction, and you did mention the reproductive issues of some of the mycotoxins. So maybe just we'll delve a little bit more into that and discuss the reproductive cases, you know, which could occur with mycotoxin ingestion.
Yes, reproduction is a very interesting field also, physiology, and of course the pathology of reproduction, all the deteriorating factors, reducing the reproductive efficiency in our farms. We have seen, and I think most of the people who are working in the swine sector have seen some of the effects sometime in their lives on of Zearalenone in pigs, in sows, either in newborns or in gilts or sows later. Someone has seen these effects, anistrous or reduced fertility. What we saw here a little bit going into the male part, we tested on, we trialed on the boar semen, and we found some very interesting results, which comes also in addition to your previous question on the interactions. We checked DON, which had, it has never been checked before, on pigs in that way, on Zearalenone, which already has been checked before. And we show also what are they doing together. And as a confirmation of what I told you before, what we saw was a less than additive effect. We saw both toxins inducing toxic effects in the male part on the boar semen in vitro, and we saw a less than additive effect. And going one step further, because we would like to see if the, if there are biotransforming products, they're metabolized, hydrolyzed Zen or DOM1, could they be in any way toxic? At least in our case, we checked the equimolar concentration, we found insignificant effects, so that they could be discussed as non-toxic products. So we have, in one side, the female part with strong Zearalenone effects, and DON also working sometimes together with Zearalenone, either at the level of ovarian function, either at the level of embryo survival, or a hormonal inducing hormonal imbalance, which is greatly important for supporting pregnancy and parturition, of course. And on the other side, the male part of the boar semen.
Yeah. So maybe sticking on the effects discussion right now, I think one of the discussions that has come out is that younger animals tend to be more susceptible than older animals to mycotoxins. So I'm just wondering if you've done any work in life stages and, you know, evaluating those effects depending on the age of the animal.
In terms of, we've worked on mixtures, on Zearalenone plus ochratoxin A mixture. And so in the prepubertal gilts, indeed, prepubertal gilts are well known to be the most sensitive age group for Zearalenone, and we saw significant effects in external genitalia. The classical size measurements are also different. Weights are also different. We didn't have the ability to check it later on to see if this one, which would be very interesting in the next study, to see if this effect at the prepubertal stage would give us significant effects as a multiparous sow, but this is to be checked in this year, 2025. So I will get back to you on that. But it, at the prepubertal stage, there was clear evidence of these effects.
Definitely have to have you back on when you get those results, because I think that's very interesting and something that I would like to know more about. So, you know, obviously mycotoxins are something to avoid if possible. If you think you have a problem, though, what are the diagnostic steps that maybe should be taken in either a clinical or a suspicious case?
On the field, we have to be really aware of mycotoxins introduction in our swine feed. So swine feed is a major sample that we should check absolutely if we're discussing about mycotoxin cases. And then we have to see signs and discuss which tissue or biological matrices would fit in our case, like urine, like feces, blood in some cases, or other, most preferably without too much manipulation of the animals.
Non-invasive,
yeah, collecting techniques. So in case of what we expect to see, where sense of DON, urine, or in other samples, we check in terms of what is our enemy, what to combine it with our clinical effects. So it depends on what we see. Biological matrices plus feed and with most preferably non-invasive techniques would be a nice combination.
Yeah, I think one of the issues, especially with feed, right, is that it can be very localized in pockets. And so maybe a negative test doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have a mycotoxin problem. So would you, in those cases, would you still recommend, or maybe even more so, going to the biological samples just to make sure that you don't have an issue?
I would recommend the issue with feed absolutely is that it's not homogeneous, the contamination, absolutely. So what do we need to stick to the recommendations here in the European Union. There are specific recommendations and also all over the world in other legislations on how to take the proper samples. But most of the times what we're missing here is the time, the correct time of feed sampling. So in cases that we don't have the right timing, you know, when we reach the case late, when we go to the farm late, after the contaminated feed has been fed, or the contaminated grain has been fed, then we should always combine always with some biological matrix in the matrix or biological substance that we would like to use. For example, nowadays there is a lot of work of dried blood spots working as biomarkers, and this is another field that I would like, if you allow me, to put 10 seconds on it. Biomarkers of exposure, which is that what we're discussing right now. So it's one case is the interaction part, and the other case is the other significant side is the biomarkers of exposure. What we want to do here now in terms of research and in terms of the field cases is to combine interactive effects with the proper biomarkers of exposure. So to take the right sample that would allow us to diagnose an interaction of two or three mycotoxins. That's not easy. That's an ongoing work, but I think we're going better to this direction.
Yeah, we like in my lab specifically, we did a test early on where we were looking at whether or not you could measure DON and its metabolites in blood and urine, and show that it had a much better correlation and you know, had a better value than even us trying to get the content in the diet, which was variable and depended on the lab. So yeah, very interested in. And nice to see that those biomarkers are becoming a little bit more prevalent and making it out in the research.
More and more. I guess it's the future. Otherwise, we will always balancing if the feed were on time, when the feed is it the right feed? Is it the corn there? Is the maize there? Is it what are we searching? So, yeah. But these biomarkers are, I think, one of the basic future diagnostic tools that we should work on.
Just need to make them maybe a little bit cheaper and a little bit easier to do, because they're not they're not obviously right. There's no you're talking about the blood spots, but when we were doing them, there wasn't really a rapid test like you would have with feed to measure some of these things. So, but that'll come with time, I'm sure.
That's the first question that we get. How much does it cost?
It's always the first question.
Absolutely, it's not a cheap issue, you know, to diagnose that, but it's I wish that it's you know very well that it's really complex in terms of laboratory techniques to prepare a cost-effective on-site easy to use tool that would give us results in minutes, but it's yeah okay. Let's hope so, but cost is always an issue. Yes, you're right, absolutely.
Okay, I think maybe we'll split the next question up into two parts. One, so the first I'll ask you about preventative measures against mycotoxicosis, and then we'll get into if you have issues mitigating, right? So we'll talk about prevention first.
Here, a cost is also a part of the prevention from my point of view, because usually the having cost as the number one criterion for raw feed, the raw materials selection, is usually the perfect way to get into mycotoxicosis cases. So from my point of view, the most the best preventive method is proper sampling, when proper selection, of course, and proper sampling at admission before introducing our grains in our feed. When usually it doesn't happen, we end up later trying to mitigate these effects. But I think, from my point of view, as a veterinarian on the field who wants to support the farm, is to work on that part a little more and increase its awareness that this could cause a huge problem in reproductive and, of course, production parameters.
Assuming you can't avoid it and you have to have something in your diet that with mycotoxins, whether regardless of what that mycotoxin is, I guess, what are some of the mitigating steps then that you can take to maybe limit or eliminate the effect of that mycotoxin?
Yes, in a perfect world, we could be able to exclude the contaminated grain and prepare a new feed, but that's not happening easily in the real world. So, and we have to be, in terms of metaphylactic schemes, always preventing and supposing that something will end up in our feed, even at low dosages, because as it's dose and time dependent substance, and the effects are based on this dose and the time of application. So I usually, for easiness of understanding, I make two categories. One is the adsorbing agents, and including all agents that they say that it cannot absorb some mycotoxin. The other one is the biotransforming agents, products with which have these abilities. So, of course, there are more subcategories. I understand that, but in more or less in two big categories, if we went to work on that, I have to say a few things about that. I see, in terms of adsorbing agents, I see a better, through our research here, better conclusions, better results with multi-component products. I see better results with products having adsorbing agents plus probiotics plus liver protective products and substances. So, for example, and on the other side, there's definitely a lot of future in these biotransforming products. As I told you before, the ability to go from Zen to hydrolyzed Zearalenone is a major detoxifying step. So both categories can be used, having in mind on what we are fighting. So first comes diagnosis to see our enemy, and then we choose the proper tool. It's not, unfortunately, to have one for everything, it doesn't come easily in our case, especially under interactions that we discussed before. It would be nice, it would be cost-effective, but it doesn't work like that in real life. So this is the two cases that I would point. And of course, I always stick to in vivo trials. I'm really, really, sticking to that point, because I want these products to be tested in vivo and see their true outcome under field conditions, which is much more complex than in vitro cases. In vitro cases, in vitro trials have also a very significant part of the experiment, absolutely, absolutely. But then we have to go one step further to see them in pigs.
Yeah, definitely agree. I get that there's some out there where I've even seen it where the product worked very well in vitro, and then when they fed it to the animal, it actually released the mycotoxin once it was in the digestive tract. So it's like, yes, it binds, but it doesn't keep it forever, right?
Correct.
So,
absolutely. Yeah,
definitely agree that in vivo step is definitely important. And like you, I am seeing a lot of promise in those blended products and that biotransformation, and kind of hitting from multiple aspects or basically detoxifying. So definitely looking forward to the more research in that area as well. Well, we're coming to the end of our time, so I'll just ask if you have a final take-home message for our listeners.
For the farmers and the scientific community and the veterinarians and nutritionists who work in the pig sector, I would like to be to point out the significance of the mycotoxin mixtures the significance of proper diagnosis and on-time diagnosis, and the significance of evaluating clinical outcome, and of course the preventive measures that should be taking always and having them always in our mind.
Great.
It's time for our famous three.
Okay, well, before I let you go, we have our three final questions that we ask all our guests. Our first question is, what is your favorite swine-related resource? Could be internet, book, people, anything. You can pick anything that you're kind of go to for swine information.
For swine health information, I use all the web and, of course, books combined, typical English written books and German written books also. So we have English and German sources, like one examples or
sure,
yeah, mycotoxin site, for example, the mycotoxin site or the pig333.com, or of course podcasts and videos like yours on the YouTube, and academy.vet from the German side. So these are my internet sources, more or less. I forgot a lot of them, but anyhow, publication sites also always, you know,
yep.
Great, significant editors with scientific papers. And in terms of books, classical books from English literature, from English universities, like Disease of Swine or similar type of books from German editors.
Very good. Maybe the next question will be a little bit easier, but a favorite book or maybe a book recommendation.
To be honest, the time is very limited for books. Yeah, I'm true. Honestly, I would like to have more time to read some more books. Right now, I don't know if I can recommend it because it's in Greek. So I'm reading a book called The Swiss Man, which is a novel, a historical novel, but it's going really slow because the time is limited, so progressing a little bit slow. But it's very, very interesting from my side. I don't know if it's translated in other languages, but it's perfect from my side point of view.
It might be translated, we don't know, but I'm sure we'll have some Greek listeners to your episodes, so at least they can look it up. And then our last question is, what is a characteristic that you think successful leaders share?
From my point of view, leaders should be a person who has the ability to combine things, combine science with experience, to introduce new knowledge in his or her field, whichever field is that. And of course, to whenever he has the ability to inspire. So combining aspects in your work and inspiring new generations and, of course, your employees, from my point of view, is one of these are two basic tools for to become a leader in whichever field of work you are.
Yeah, great. Well, that brings us to the end. So I'll just thank you again for coming on. It's a topic that I love talking about, so I'm glad I got to interview at least one guest that wanted to talk about it. So definitely good from my end. So thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much for the invitation and the wonderful conversation today. It was a real pleasure.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.